Hey everyone, you're watching or listening to the Viral Volley Podcast. I'm Rob Aspero, and with me today is my very special guest, longtime sports journalist for UH Athletics, but I've only known her through what matters to us and me right now on our podcast, which is indoor men's and women's volleyball, the Sanbos, and USA National Team Volleyball. So Sydney, thanks again for joining me here on the Viral Volley Podcast.
Thank you again for having me.
Well, I was reading your bio information on your blog and how you've been described on the Star Advertiser, but it says you have expanded coverage of all things volleyball, including notes, observations, and analysis of the Rainbow Wahine, Rainbow Warriors, Sanbos, and Team USA. And I added on that extensive inside history with passionate following of not only UH volleyball, but all NCAA volleyball, because I did have that chat with you when you were in Long Beach when I saw you last, and with the USA volleyball national teams. Can you, in our previous interview with volleyballmag.com, I wanted to sneak that in there, but I'm going to do it here in my segment. But if you had to pick a particular personality that stuck out in your time of covering UH volleyball, men's or women's or beach, what two or three stick out in your mind?
So, I went through the all-time letter winner list for all three of the programs. And I was hoping you'd ask for top 10 on each of them, but okay, so let's just go Wahine indoor. I'm kind of partial to setters. Mm-hmm. So I think in your readership and blog won't necessarily know some of these names. One is Joyce Ka'apuni. She was the setter for the 82-83 back-to-back NCAA champions mm-hmm. for the Wahine. She actually played in 74 and 76, then took a hiatus to go for the national team and then get married. But there was a transition time between the AIAW, which ran women's sports, and then when the NCAA, hostile takeover, it was, started doing added women's sports. So she actually had 2 years of eligibility left, and she was able to be grandfathered in. So she and I were only like maybe 2 years apart. So she was setting in her late 20s when they won the 82-83 titles. I'd say her. Tita Ahuna, who played for the 87 championship team, mm-hmm. Also started out as a setter, ended up being an outside hitter. She, I think, was a four-sport athlete at Kamehameha, is the only person in the state of Hawaii to win a state title, coach a state title, win a national title as a player and a coach, because she was a coach for Hawaii Pacific when they won the national championship. Great, great athlete, to the point where in 87, when Indianapolis? They were playing Stanford, and UH won set one, and then Stanford came back and won set two. And Don Shaw, who was coaching the Cardinal at the time,
Don Shaw reference in there.
I know. Yeah, so Don later told me, he goes, we had just won, but I looked across the net and I looked into Tita's eyes and I'm like, we're toast, because she was so bent on winning a national championship. He was like, I knew we were done just because of her. And, and Hawaii ended up winning that one. I think, I guess I'm a little partial to setters. Kanoi Kamana'o, one of the all-time greats. And of course, the current coach, Robin Amo. And mm-hmm. you can't really say Robin's name without knowing and mentioning her associate head coach, which is Angelica Ljungqvist. Mm-hmm. So I think, there's great players. I mean, you don't have enough time to talk about the history, both AIAW and the NCAA history of, just name dropping, Lily Kahumoku, Kim Willoughby, T. Williams, Suzanne Ege. I mean, the list just goes on. And there's a good crop of women right now. Even, Noreen Yosia, she did something that nobody else in the country was doing. She was a back row setter who played front row, and she rotated to the front. And she had still about 5'10", was one of the top blockers in the Big West. Mm-hmm. And she was just phenomenal. To think that you had to go from running a team to being part of being set. She was phenomenal at what she was able to do. So just those, I have like another 20 that I could mention, but that's them. Sambo's, I would have to start with Katie Spieler. Mm-hmm. One of the most decorated Sambos in their short program history. I think Emily Maglio might have been a better beach player, and she was a phenomenal indoor player, and she's one of the few players to win to be an All-American in both indoor and beach. I think Ari Homayoun, who passed Katie Spieler in terms of all-time wins, is another example. Nikki Taylor, who also was an All-American in indoor and beach.
Right.
For the Sambos, they've made the postseason in every year but one in the sport's existence. So that's pretty, it's for the beach, the Sambos. Mm-hmm. For the men, I think, some of the people I've mentioned, Yuval Kotz, one of my very favorite players, Jason Olive, that I know you're familiar with.
Yeah.
He was on the 95 team. Alan Allen, back from the 80s.
Oh, that's definitely, yep. Always a great athlete, and some of the most entertaining teams I've seen in Hawaii history too.
Oh, for sure. And even now when Sivan Leone comes back to play in the alumni match, everyone still grunts when he goes back to serve. Alfie Reft, great, great libero. I have an affinity for Tui Tuileta.
Yeah.
Who was just the nicest kid. At the moment, he's actually baking cookies, and that's his new business, is he's selling cookies. He's called the Cookie Man, and so it's K-U-K-I. And his and no surprise, they're like Samoan size. They look like gigantic Manapua, and Tasubau, whatever. It looks like an inflated hockey puck. I mean, they're so huge. So I think him, recent, the Worsley brothers, of course. I mean, Gage is still with the team. And Joe, hands down, and I really am sorry that Joe didn't get player of the year in 19. And I think it was partly because people looked at that team of, 18, that people, there were so many good players on the Hawaii team, and it was split the vote. I mean, you had Potapunov, you had Von mm-hmm. Tilburg, and you had Joe Worsley. And I think people couldn't decide which Hawaii player should get it. Nothing to take away from TJ DeFalco. Awesome, awesome player. But I really believe Joe Worsley was the best player in the country that year.
Yeah, there was so much talent those 2-3 years. And, I look at Joe Worsley and, the rest and his brother Gage and the 808, outer system 808 guys, like to call them the funny guys. But Joe is a living highlight reel. I went back through my footage, and he just made some outstanding plays and saves, and they were spectacular. And, even someone you may know, someone named Tiff Wells, he's like, you got to watch this setter back before he really got the reins of the Rainbow Warrior team. Uh-huh. And I was like, wow, he is good. How did everyone overlook him? And, of course, I was given the story about a lot of coaches passed on him because it was hype. But, gosh, Joe is such a playmaker and such an exciting player to watch.
Well, the reason that he came to Hawaii was because, one, Charlie Wade, Coach Wade, said he would be a setter, not a libero, because everybody else wanted him to be a libero. Mm-hmm. And it also gave him an opportunity. Gage committed. So they wanted to play together, and the only way they could play together is if Joe was a setter and Gage was the libero. They both could have gone elsewhere. They could have gone to UCLA, but they both would have been liberos, and they never would have been on the court at the same time.
Yeah.
So them committing to Hawaii, plus the fact that Roger, their father, was a technical assistant for Dave Shoji for one season. And they kind mm-hmm. of, they had family ties to Hawaii, and it worked out perfectly. But yeah, there's one particular set where Joe is running And he does this back set from where the traditional serving line used to be to the mm-hmm. back right. He does a blind back set perfectly cross court to, I think it was Potapunov, who just comes in on the left side and nails it. And there was no block because no one ever thought the ball was going to get back there that quickly mm-hmm. too. So that's one high. Yeah, you're right. He's a highlight reel.
Well, if you check my Instagram feed, I'm like, wait a second, all of them are Joe. They're not of Colton or Rado or SVT. It's all Joe with these great pursuit plays and saves and blocks and even getting a few swings off the block for winners. So,
yes,
I mean, he really was such an entertaining athlete to watch. And he definitely played a lot bigger than what the stat sheet said.
Or what the heights stats said, his roster right. said, oh, for sure. I mean, you know, he's listed at 6 feet and you're like, yeah, right. Maybe in A6 heels, but no.
I wanted to, obviously you have such an extensive depth and breadth of knowledge about all the volleyball programs, but you know, what I think a lot of other people don't know is you covered other sports as well. You were at, I believe, one of the Super Bowls. I think it was San Diego, if I remember correctly. And you are in the visiting locker room doing the post-game interviews for basketball. Where did this passion for sports journalism come about for you?
Well, you know, it probably goes back to, I grew up very traditional in San Diego. My grandparents were from Portugal. So we were raised very European, very traditional with, you know, gender roles. And girls were supposed to be in the house to clean, cook, crochet, and go to and clean the church. And that's pretty much my Saturdays. You know, we just weren't allowed to play sports. And I really enjoyed sports. We were going to San Diego Charter games when I was 5. Mm-hmm. I wanted to play in the NFL at one point. And yeah, that did not work out. But yeah, I just was in love with sports. And one of the things is I had 2 younger brothers who were allowed to play. And I just didn't think it was fair that I couldn't. So I played volleyball in grammar school. I played 4 years varsity basketball in high school. But I always liked to write. So mm-hmm. I was scorekeeping at an early age. So I just had this desire to be around athletics from an early age, and I happened to be lucky enough to be able to combine my joy of writing with my joy of sports, and I kind of had a really good, you know, lucked into a pretty good combination that ended up in a pretty cool career. So that's kind of where it is.
That is great. Hey, you actually mentioned in our volleyballmag.com segment about the way the Stan Sheriff Center crowd was, but it's one of the, in my opinion, it's probably the best place to play any kind of volleyball in the United States. What makes the Stan Sheriff Center, based on your years of experience and being there in Hawaii, such an incredible place to play and a special place to play?
Well, I think it's just the knowledge that the fans have. I mean, you go to other places, yeah, they've got really good crowds, but nowhere else is the crowd cheering for the opponent. The crowd at the Stan Sheriff Center cheers for good volleyball. And it's just innate. You know, it's one of those things where Hawaii embraced the sport from long ago. You know, it's just one of those backyard things, go down the beach. Despite what some people say, beach volleyball was invented in Waikiki, and that was
not one of the Santa Monica crowd then, huh?
You know, I've heard the stories, and I'm like, no, it's documented that it was during Dad Center, who was the club captain at Outrigger Canoe Club, wanted to keep his beach boys in shape because they were also lifeguards and doing the beach boys and teaching surfing and things like that, that they strung a line up in between a couple coconut trees and started to play volleyball when there weren't any waves. So there's a plaque in Australia, and you can talk to the great surfer Fred Hemmings, who went down and commemorated. He was on the Duke Onomoku surf team back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And for the 100th anniversary, Senator Hemmings went down to Australia for the 100th commemoration of beach volleyball. So,
wow.
But getting back to the crowd, it's just that people really appreciate good volleyball. And the nice thing is that Hawaii has had the teams that merit the support. Mm-hmm. And people ask me, like, how did you become, they tell me I'm a good volleyball writer. I take that as a compliment. And my thought is that the Hawaii teams deserve good coverage. So I was lucky enough to be a part of it, because I believe that their teams have been so successful, so consistent. And I think you and I talked a little bit about yesterday when we were setting this up, about why Hawaii volleyball is so relevant. And I mm-hmm. think it's, and the coaches even said that, you know, after Dave Shoji retired, they were talking to me like, you know, Hawaii needs to stay relevant because it's good for the sport, mm-hmm. because it maintains this tradition. I mean, you know, good programs come and go, but there hasn't been the consistency of excellence that Hawaii has had, especially with the Wahine. I mean, you know, you've had, you know, let's just say UOP. UOP mm-hmm. was great in the early 80s, and then Laskevich went over to, John Dunning went from UOP over to Stanford, and then Stanford yeah. became really good. And then what happened to UOP? I mean, there's been pockets of programs that have been really good, but not like 40 years of Wahine volleyball.
Yeah. It's definitely a special place for the sport of volleyball. You know, the crowds, and I've only been able to experience it, I think, twice. I was there for the some exhibitions between the women's national team and Brazil, but I got to meet the aunties who have the leis. And it's so such a wonderful and beautiful thing that the fans are so knowledgeable about the game. But you're right, they cheer for good volleyball, and they respect their opponents, you know, and they give them just as much support, at least they make it seem like it, as they would their own UH teams. So it definitely is a very special place for the sport.
And you mentioned the aunties, and they're there in their little corner every game, and they give leis to the visiting teams, and no one understands, what do you mean you're going to give us flowers afterwards? And sometimes the other team has beaten Hawaii, and they're like, you're still going to give us leis? Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah. The next question for you, Cindy, is you've had one of the most special and unique opportunities to sit alongside your son, ESPN Honolulu and CBS Sports Hawaii analyst Tip Wells, for well over a decade covering UH sports. How do you feel that you have influenced his career in sports?
I'm not really sure if I've influenced him, but I can tell you this, and it's kind of a couple cute stories. I was pregnant with him during the women's and then the men's seasons of 85, 86. And so I almost had him in Klum Gym. And if you can imagine being 9 months up high, sitting in old Klum Gym, which is, you know, you were lucky that the termites could still hold hands and kept the roof up. But he really loved crowd noise, and he reacted while I was pregnant to crowd noise. So I had a feeling he would enjoy this. But I can tell you the funny story is the day he was born, Alan Rosehill was coaching the Warriors at the time. I called him up and I said, hey coach, you know, you were so close in beating Stanford on Wednesday, and they had a day in between. And I said, I just can't come tonight. And he says, I'm going to call your boss. I said, call my doctor. I'm not coming. And he goes, oh boy, what? I said, boy, big hands, he'll be a setter. So fast forward 14 years later, my son goes to Iolani for the volleyball freshman mm-hmm. tryouts. And I walk in, and Alan Rosehill happens to be the assistant coach for Iolani. And he looks at me and goes, what are you doing here? And I said, well, you remember 14 years ago when I said, boy, big hands, he'll be a setter? And he goes, yeah. And I said, meet your setter. And so my son did set. Really good hands. I think because, and he had an amazing upbringing in terms of being able to go to places, meet people that other little kids didn't have the opportunity. The first person he shook hands with was Merv Lopes, the great Chaminade basketball coach. He learned his numbers by watching Wahine volleyball, and we would be driving up the Pali and there'd be mile markers, and every number he'd go past, he would like one, T. Williams, like he was announcing. I mean, it was so funny. Number eight, Martina Sinsarova. So, you know, that, and there was a time he was like two and a half. And he wasn't really talking. And I had the Olympic issue. And I also do a lot of the Olympic coverage for Hawaii, in the state of Hawaii. And he was going through my Sports Illustrated, just looking at pictures. And he's two and a half, and he wasn't really talking. And then he looked at the picture and goes, Louise Ritter, high jump. and he goes, Lugo, diving. And so that was Greg Louganis. And so he knew the pictures. Right. And it just so, you know, so little things like that. He and my former husband, his father, the night before the Stan Sheriff opened, we snuck in and took a look at the court in the dark. And all that was lit was some exit signs and some other little lights. But we were able to stand there in the dark on the concourse. And I just remember thinking, I wonder what this is going to be like tomorrow. And that was a sellout against San Jose State. I mean, that was kind of cool. So with him, he's, you know, he grew up around UH sports. He went to their camps. And, you know, I know he would be the first to tell you that he just thought it was normal, that he was hanging. He was a towel boy for basketball during the Kansas upset. Mm-hmm. You can see him at the end of the game waving the rally towel at the end. I mean, he's 10 at this point. I mean, it was just he's had some pretty, pretty great experiences even before he became a broadcaster.
Wow. In my conversations with you in the past, it's been obvious that you are one of the most knowledgeable and passionate followers of volleyball. How did that come about specifically for you?
With volleyball, I think, like I said, that was the first sport I was seriously allowed to play was volleyball. and we had a very good Catholic school team. We won 3 city championships. It was just a sport. But then I fell in love with basketball and I wanted to go to UCLA and, of course, you know, follow John Wooden and had a mad crush on Bill Walton. So we were 4 years apart. And I just, you know, and then I fell in love with basketball. So I played basketball in high school. But then I went back to played intramurals at UCLA, played a bunch of sports there. With volleyball, I really believe that because Hawaii was so good, my first full, I came to Hawaii, and I think I mentioned to you yesterday that I was working in Guam back when they weren't hiring women in sports, and Gannett offered me a job, but then I had to go to Guam to actually do what I wanted to do, you know. And I had also written at the Daily Bruin, but I got rejection letters telling me that women didn't belong in sports. So I went to Guam to prove that this is what I really wanted to do. And I came back to Honolulu, and Gannett owned both the Star Bulletin and the Pacific Daily News in Guam. So I came back and they offered me a job in Hawaii. And the first game I went to was 81. And so I didn't come until October. So they were already into the season and there was another guy covering them. But I went down, and the first game I went to for the Star Bulletin was sold out Blaisdell Arena between UCLA and Hawaii. And I had covered the Bruins when I was in college. And I walk in and Andy Bannikowski looks at me and goes, "And you're here because?" And I'm like, "Hi, I'm covering you now for this paper." And he was like, "Oh, okay." But then my first full season was 82, and that's when they won the national championship. So I think that set the tone for me, in that there was just a standard of excellence for this program that I had to match with my writing. Mm-hmm. So as I think I said a little earlier, they just deserved good coverage, and it made me a better writer. And I had the advantage that we were the afternoon paper at the time. Mm-hmm. And my deadline was 7 a.m. if I wanted to take that time because the morning paper, you already knew who won and what the score was. So my job was to, you know, go beyond the score and tell you the who and the how and the why. And so I think that's where I developed my, I guess the best way to describe it, maybe my conversational style of writing. Mm-hmm. So I really want to talk to the readers and tell them what I saw and hope that I interpret it. They would have had they been there as well.
Right. Now, being an insider like you have been for 40 years, what has made the UH program so successful in beach and indoor volleyball?
Well, of course, you know, you say the good coaching. They've been blessed with really phenomenal coaches. But I think the lure of playing for Hawaii, you know, it's like nowhere else. Nowhere else do you walk and you're representing the entire state. And the people who come and play for Hawaii realize that burden and that responsibility. So the type of players that can handle being far from home, and this is before, you know, the internet and people and live streaming and everything, the foundation that was created back when, you know, radio wasn't even doing this, TV was not involved. Mm-hmm. The only people at the games in the 70s and 80s were mostly, you know, myself and the retired Honolulu Advertiser writer, the great Ann Miller. Mostly, you know, we were there. So people relied on the newspapers before TV and radio got involved. Mm-hmm. So I just think people had this connection from the very beginning. And the type of athletes, I don't think there's any player that has worn a Hawaii uniform that I would consider a jerk. Mm-hmm. I can name, but I won't, plenty of opponents that I would call jerks. Mm-hmm. And just arrogant, don't do a disservice to the game.
Right.
And some coaches too, but I think Hawaii has been blessed with a great combination of players who understand what it means to play for the university, which means mm-hmm. to play for the state, and the talented coaches that guided them along the way.
Yeah. You know, That hits the nail right on the head. All the Hawaii athletes I've interviewed, just for this half year of doing podcasting, it shows that there is they treat it as an honor and a privilege to represent not only UH, but also the state of Hawaii. So, the culture there is a wonderful and a beautiful and a respectful culture of the sport and appreciative of the opportunity they have to be at that university.
You know, you mentioned my son. I just want to do a shout out to him. I believe he's one of the best in the game in the country. And, you know, he was doing his broadcast when he was at Pepperdine. And I remember listening to him on the air. And Pepperdine actually emailed us to tell us that they'd gotten some really good compliments from the broadcast. And one was from a UC San Diego parent. Mm-hmm. So I took it upon myself to write the parent, and I said, thank you, you know, for the kind words about my son. Glad that he could be a part of your son's career, and he's really enjoying his career at Pepperdine. And the parent came back and said, we thought they were professional broadcasters. We didn't realize they were students. And so what I would like to say about him is he's been very professional, even from his collegiate days. Mm-hmm. And it's really a privilege to be able to sit next to him because I learned so much. He studies so hard and he's so thorough. And you know, knowing that the homework he does, he probably doesn't use about 40% of the stuff he has. but he's done that thoroughness there. And there's times when I'm like, really? I didn't know that. But I think the fun thing that I have between the two of us, and I'm hoping that it will be able to continue with my sitting next to him, is that he sometimes doesn't see everything that happens. And he like looks at me, and what I'll do is, you know, I use that, you know, the volleyball signals, like, you know, back row attack, out of rotation. So I'll just sit there subtly next to the table and do my little hand signals to tell him what the violation might have been that he missed, or if there was something that he was keeping track of in it. And I'll write a little note going, oh, last time it happened was here. And because I have a little more time than he, you know, because he's, you know, play by play, just constant there, you know, and I'm keeping score in my notebook, but I have time to look up stuff during, you know, the plays, when, but he can't do that. So, and it's been fun to be able to help him out. But he also does things on air that I'm like, oh, I'm going to use that in my story. Thank you.
So he's got a very highly skilled assistant helping him on the broadcast.
Yeah, I think he does, unpaid, but that's okay. But you know, what's really cool is I believe we still are the only mother-son team in sports in the country. I mean, there's some dads and daughters, but we're the only mother-son, which is, I think, kind of cool.
Well, that's what makes it such a unique experience. And, you know, I didn't even make the connection between your relationship with Tiff until probably like around 2009, 2010, I believe, which I'm like, that's your mom?
Oh, all the good stuff. Oh, trust me. He'll come home from road trips and goes, do I have to tell you how many people came up to tell me hi? It's like every coach he runs into. And that's kind of cool, too, that there's retired coaches who still remember me and who know that he's my son and will go out of their way to come over to say, hey, tell your mom hi. And former players too. And that, you know, that's nice that, you know, over the years that people remember. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you interview so many athletes, and Rob, I know you've done this too, is that sometimes you forget all the people because you can't remember everybody or exactly what you wrote about them. And you just go, and they, you know, they'll come up to you. And I take it from Duke Ahanamoku, when he, you know, he was so famous and had so many people come up to him. When people would go, well, you remember me, right? So he always said, how nice to see you again. So I've kind of taken that. I'm like, yeah, yeah, of course. How nice to see you again.
Well, I know that in everything that you've done in your first 40 years here covering sports has been highly appreciated and enjoyed by so many people. I just hope that this next season is not an ending, but instead of change of title, where we will see you continuing to cover the sport and growing the games and growing athletics and putting the eyes on Hawaii sports, because it's such a unique and such a fun place to be a part of that culture, or just having a view of what happens out there. So I thought it'd be fitting. I found a comment on your blog after you announced your retirement you were stepping away. Says, so sorry that so many losses have befallen you and your family. Praying, no doubt, this too shall pass. And the wonderful beacons that you, Tiff, are such a large and integral part of the magic that is Hawaii volleyball. I second your nomination to that circle of honor and look forward to your happy return and brighter days. Blessings upon blessings, Cindy. The size of the obstacles is a measure of the person, and clearly you are a bright, positive, and patient light in our lives. When I read some of your lesser enlightened posts and how you and our great coaches and programs help elevate their understanding, it is clear to me you are a significant cog in the wheelhouse that allows such great programs and loving, knowledgeable fans. Hoping HSA survives and you and Tiff continue to shine your light upon our programs and lives. That was fitting to read. If you hadn't read that, it was very touching, because it just, I think it encapsulates not only the Hawaiian fan base, although it would be more towards them. I really think that anyone who knows, who's worked with you, walked alongside you, knows that you are a great source of just covering sports for Hawaii and volleyball. I'm going to say biased volleyball.
Well, very kind words from whoever wrote that. It wasn't me, and I know it wasn't my son.
K-Bay, March 26th at 3:26 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, my. Someone had some time on their hands, didn't they? You know, that was very kind. I don't think I did read that. I'll have to go back and see if I can't access the blog. Very kind. You know, it was just weird. because I think I've shared some of, you know, our volleyball preview magazines, which have won national awards. It was weird not being there at practice because there was no practice. Mm-hmm. And it was weird not preparing for the season like I've prepared with in so many things. And it was felt very strange that the season opener was supposed to be last week. And my son and I happened to be having dinner together and we're like, this is weird. We should be at the arena.
Oh, I know what you're talking about in a big kind of way.
Well, I appreciate all the time you've given me and all the kind words. And, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better career. And I don't think it's over. I just think there's another door to open and see what I can do. And, you know, I don't feel like I'm retired. I feel like there's just something different.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to what this next season of life has for you, because I have a feeling I haven't seen you or heard from you for the last time, because there's way too much experience, knowledge, and history to just not be doing any more of the volleyball thing or sports for that matter.
Yes, for sure.
Well, Cindy Lewis, thank you for all the time that you have spent, not only with me here on the Vodcast podcast, but just to volleyball and growing the game, because it's rarely apparent that your passion is far bigger than not only the islands and the world, but it goes all galactic, because it's so wonderful to read what you have written and just to hear what you have to say from that storytelling perspective.
Well, I can tell you what that, where the business changed is probably what made me better too, is they're just, you know, when it used to just be the local people reading the paper, you knew who your audience was. Mm-hmm. But when we were one of the first papers to go online, now all of a sudden we had literally a worldwide audience. And that was kind of scary to realize that, wow, I don't know how many people are reading me, but there are people out there that I will never meet. And people who will never be able to come up to me and talk to me about it. But and then the blog showed up and I could interact with, you know, some of our readers there. Mm-hmm. But so that put even more pressure on you to be good. And you have to, it's your name on that story. But you have to be good every day. And that's a lot of pressure. But, you know, I welcomed it because the teams I have been covering deserved it. So it made me a better writer.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Cindy, for taking all the time this afternoon. And I look forward to running into you sooner rather than later when we all get beyond this COVID thing.
Yes. Aloha and stay safe.
You too, Cindy.
Okay. Aloha.